How's it going, everybody? It is Thursday, currently 4:40 p.m. Central Time, and I'm getting ready to pull out onto the highway. It is time for another episode of the Homeward Path Podcast. This is the show by me and MTG Dad for all of you at home who are struggling through trying to play Magic like I am on a tight budget, financially or time-related. I mean, it's whatever. It's rough to play this game as a parent when you've got other responsibilities compounded on top of that. My name is Adam, for those of you who haven't listened before, and it's good to be back. I did not do an episode last week. I missed it. I really did. But I did not miss the process because I was on a mini vacation with the family. We took the kids to the Tennessee Aquarium in Chattanooga and spent a couple of days down there. It's probably my favorite city in the state because it's a big city with a lot to do, but it feels like a small town. It doesn't feel, you know, overcrowded. It doesn't feel rough and tumble. It's just, it's pleasant, and I really enjoy it. So, got to eat some great food while we were down there. It was good to just kind of take a break, decompress a little bit, and just spend some time with the people that matter the most to me. So, for this week, coming back a little bit rusty, I've been following events that have been going on, but I didn't do a lot of like deep research. There's no real deep dive this week. This week's episode is going to focus on my first segment that I normally do every week. Is just going to be the entire episode. I'm going to bounce around and I'm going to talk about a few brews that I feel like are interesting entry points. There's going to be two for standard and two for modern. But first, I've got to thank the people who make this show possible. It begins with the network over at constructedcriticism.com. And I don't know what there is to say about this network anymore. Like, we're adding people left and right. I cannot tell you the complete lineup anymore because I have to stop and check it myself, and I'm, you know, driving. It may have changed by the time I check it. Like, so much going on these days. But I'm happy to be the casual, the you know, love of the game guy on this network and bring the enthusiasm, bring the passion. I'm embracing the casual this week. And speaking of embracing the casual, inkedgaming.com can help you embrace the casual by giving you all the custom designs you want. You can have all the fun you want with all the sweet playmats, sleeves, deck boxes. And if you use our promo code CCMTG10 at checkout, you can get 10% off your order, and it lets them know we sent you, and that can help us improve the shows on the network over the long term. It's a win-win for everybody involved. And if you would like to support the show directly, you can do so at patreon.com/homewardpathmtg. We are currently up to, as of whenever the next monthly cycle clears, we will be up to, I think it's $17 and some change on our Patreon goal to help with the entry fee for Grand Prix Memphis. So I appreciate everything y'all are doing. If you would like to help with that, feel free to do so. If you would like to get better patron rewards for your patronage, please just let me know. I will be happy to work out something that is more beneficial to you. And moving from one thing that's beneficial to you into our show, which I hope is beneficial to you, this week we're going to talk about some brews, because I have been like trying really hard to stay straight-laced and competitive, but this standard format is so much fun. So much fun. It's so much fun. The hyperbole doesn't exist to describe how much fun I'm having playing the standard format. We have, you know, I believe it was Brian Brunduin that was talking about it in an article that I read today, that the standard format feels a lot like modern, in that decks rise to the top and then are swiftly answered by every other deck. You know, there's not one deck that is just absolutely demolishing the tournament scene right now, and that is a massive breath of fresh air after the last 2 years, where we have had a clear-cut, concise best deck, and everybody else just kind of had to try to beat it. So being able to take a break from that type of format and play kind of a tier 2 format, where as long as your deck is capable of doing a thing, and that thing lines up well, you have a chance. And I love that. So I thought this week I'd take an opportunity with this spotlighting of the brews the Spotlight 2 decks who do a thing, and that thing is maybe a little off the beaten path. And to start with, we're going to talk about Punisher Burn. Because Punisher Burn is the closest approximation to a modern deck in Standard right now. What I mean by that is it's the deck that is the most linear, maybe with the exception of some of the white weenie builds, but it's the deck that just doesn't, it's the least interactive deck in Standard. Like, even white weenie is playing, playing some number of Conclave Tribunal. It has a transforming sideboard where it goes a little bit bigger with the ability to play a little bit more of a mid-range game against decks where it needs to do that. Punisher Burn just wants to reduce your life total to zero as quickly as possible, and anything it's doing in the sideboard is a direct answer to things you're going to be doing to keep them from doing that. So for those of you who don't know about the archetype, and first of all, play Arena, because you will find out very quickly. But for those of you who aren't familiar with the archetype, we have Vyashino Pyromancer and Gitu Lava Runner in Standard right now, comprising the core of the Wizard's aggressive engine, so to speak. Those two and Wizard's Lightning give you the best pull to a red aggro deck as far as kind of what you want out of your early drops and burn spells, because Pyromancer comes with a shock attached to it. Wizard's Lightning is Lightning Bolt as long as you have one of the aforementioned creatures, and then Gitu Lava Runner, once you've played a few turns of magic, it's just Goblin Guide that doesn't give your opponent lands. And the fact that it has two toughness is randomly relevant sometimes against cards like Druid of the Cowl. There's a Druid of the Cowl, Seeker Squire, there's a list. And the fact that it can get to two power is also relevant against creatures like Merfolk Branchwalker. There's more, and I'm just blanking right now because I'm tired. But it's a collection of creatures, and there's very few in the deck. Typically speaking, what I've seen, anyway, has been Gitu Lava Runner, Vyashino Pyromancer, and Electrostatic Field. And Electrostatic Field is where we start delving into just how linear this deck is. Because Electrostatic Field turbocharges all your burn spells. Shock becomes Lightning Bolt. Wizard's Lightning becomes almost Fire Blast. Lightning Strike becomes Flame Jet. And then you have kind of the top of your curve, which is your Punisher engine in Risk Factor and Sword Point Diplomacy. And these cards are similar but different enough to matter, if that makes sense. Namely, Sword Point Diplomacy can put a lot of tension on your opponent to make three separate decisions involving the cards that it reveals. You know, some amount of the time the Sword Point is going to deal less than four damage. I'd argue a pretty sizable percentage of the time it's going to deal less than four damage, and that's okay. Because Risk Factor is here to pick up the slack by being able to make your opponent choose between giving you three cards, which could potentially represent a lot more than four damage, or giving you, a four damage burn spell to their face. And that's a difficult task to... That's a difficult clock to measure when you're factoring in things like... When you're factoring in things like Sovereign's Bite, Shock, Wizard's Lightning, Lightning Strike, these massive piles of just direct damage you've got, and then little chip-in attacks from Lava Runner and Pyromancer and Electrostatic Field chipping in for an extra point of damage. It adds up in a hurry, and the fact that this deck is so laser-focused on life totals puts it in an interesting spot against a lot of the more mid-range decks because they are so overloaded with creature removal. The fact that a good portion of your ability to kill your opponent is not dictated by how much removal your opponent has access to is really intriguing. And it makes the deck a really interesting kind of starting point if you want to try to explore this standard format through the lens of an aggressive or proactive shell that can kind of maybe take an angle on your opponent. And the other benefit is, outside of Risk Factor, this deck is hyper cheap. Risk Factor notwithstanding, the deck, I don't know that there's a card in the deck that costs more than $2. You know, that includes Dragon Skull Summits and Cinder Barons if you're playing Cinder Barons. Like, it's not difficult to build the core of this deck. And then if you end up getting the risk factor, or if you just go ahead and shell out for them, like, it's a deck that can play. I don't know how well. I don't know. I'm not here to say this is the deck that's going to warp the standard format by any stretch of the imagination. But as the results have borne out locally, it can win you some games at FNMs and standard showdowns. And that takes me to the other one, the other deck that it's more about kind of the core engine than it is the actual full 75. But my friend Ryan has put together this little masterpiece that he calls Guttersnipe Burn. And it's exactly what it sounds like. It is very similar to the Swordpoint deck, except he's not going all the way in and playing all the Punisher cards, and instead, he's playing cantrips to smooth over draws and just make sure he can find all his burn spells. And then Guttersnipe is a better and worse electrostatic field in that it deals an extra point of damage with every spell, but it's a more fragile body because it's a 2-2. It also doesn't block as well as something like an electrostatic field. But the upside is that he gains access to, in blue, you gain access to cards like Ionize, which can actually just keep a Lyra Dawnbringer from hitting the battlefield and dome your opponent for two for the effort. And I watched him in a match win in a situation against Green-White with the board the way it was that I don't see Is It Drake winning. Which is, he was able to win a game where his opponent was at 11 and he was at 1. And he managed to, with a pair of Guttersnipes on the board, resolve, or he cast Explosion for 1, then Ionizes the Explosion and then negates the Ionize. So the only spell that resolves out of those is the Negate. But his opponent still dies because Guttersnipe Burn. Now, to be fair, Ryan has been playing this deck for quite a while, all the way back to pre-rotation in some form. But it just got a little bit of a shot in the arm from all the jumpstart cards. And what it looks like to me as a core concept is it looks like something that would be a really interesting buy-in if you want to do Is It Drake, but you don't have the funds or the cards to trade in order to get Arclight Phoenix. You know, if you're fine with shelling out for Steam Vents because you will need them for Modern, or you know they're going to be the best lands in Standard for the next 2 years, that's fine. But maybe Arclight Phoenix is just past your budget, or you know you prioritize the lands and getting the rest of the framework for a deck instead of just getting the most expensive card in it. Whatever the case may be. Playing a variation on Is It Drake that incorporates Guttersnipe as part of its package to pressure your opponent's life total doesn't seem completely outlandish. It's strictly worse than having Arclight Phoenix. I will not suggest anything otherwise. But the idea of being in a situation where you don't have access to the Phoenix, but you can still get massive bursts of damage by casting a bunch of spells, it's a similar but different card. And that's kind of the way I look at the card in the Is It Drake shell. It reminds me, it's a lot like what I want out of a Phoenix. It's just a worse version of it. Because if I get to untap with it, or if I get to leverage it properly, my opponent takes a ton of damage. So, I mean, that looks like a really intriguing place for me in Standard. And it's something I'm going to be looking at really hard. It's something I'm really close to having built, and I'm going to do what I can to try and get it together. Switching gears and moving to Modern, this next deck is much less of an entry point and much more of a microcosm of what the Modern format seems to be about. We were just talking about a deck that maybe would be better, that would almost certainly be better with the presence of Arclight Phoenix, and this next deck is wild and powerful and explosive because of the presence of Arclight Phoenix. I'm talking about Hollow Phoenix, Hollow Arclight Hollow One, whatever you want to call it. It is Hollow One exploiting the synergy that Arclight Phoenix has with their overall shell. So, similar to the Bridgevine deck that we saw, this is kind of the explosive nature of Hollow One kind of ratcheted up to 11. It's less consistent, but more explosive. The fact that you have another creature that you like having in your graveyard is really, really important. It gives you something other than specifically Bloodghast to bring back. And it's one that you have to do a lot less work to get than something like a Vengevine. So Vengevine, Hollowvine was a deck that was like really intriguing because of the just absolutely nutty turn two draws it could get. You know, looting, or sometimes turn one draws where you looting and mill, you know, Bridge from Below, Vengevine, cast Hangerback Walker, cast Walking Ballista, get back a Vengevine, and make a pair of 2/2s. That's a pretty good board on turn one. But this deck is a little bit different in that it's not as explosive like on turn one, but it just adds a little bit more fuel to the fire that is the Hollow One strategy. And it's kind of, as I pointed out, it is kind of the microcosm of the modern format. It does a really broken thing on the first couple of turns, builds this really massive board state that its opponent is going to have difficulty answering, and then rides it to a win. That sounds like Affinity. That sounds like Hollow One. That sounds like Hardened Scales. That sounds like Humans. It sounds like the entire modern format. The running joke is Modern is this great collection of decks that all get together and kill Jeskai Control before turn four. And this is another deck to add to that collection. The benefit of Arclight Phoenix is it allows the deck to have a little bit more of a grinding plan in the event that things don't go well. You know, Phoenix is a much better pressurer of life totals and resource to exploit than something like a Bloodghast, because it hits harder. It's allowed to block. I mean, I don't know what there is to say about the card that I haven't already kind of gushed over. The card is fantastic. And slotting it into Hollow One just makes all the sense in the world. And then moving from this shell to one that's maybe a little less broken, but maybe a little more interesting. Scotty Porosky shared one in the Constructed Criticism family that really caught my eye, and it's something I'm really, I'm not going to say intrigued enough to like go all the way in on, but it's definitely something that I can see it maybe having some legs, especially at a local level. And that is Intruder Alarm Combo. So Intruder Alarm Combo, for me, there's a little bit of a personal history with it, because one of the decks I tested against for my first PTQ, not PPTQ, PTQ, back in 2008, was Blue-Green Elf Alarm. It was right after the release of Lorwyn, and we figured out that it was possible to play Llanowar Elves or Birds of Paradise with Imperious Perfect and Intruder Alarm and make an arbitrarily large number of 2/2 elf tokens. And then leveraged with opposition, we could tap our opponent down for a turn in order to leverage, you know, in order to get to untap with all those tokens and kill our opponent. It was ultimately not a deck we ended up playing. The guy that was playing it did not go with us to the PTQ. Hindsight, I should have borrowed it, but that's neither here nor there. So I've always had a little bit of a soft spot for Intruder Alarm decks. And being able to play it as a two-card combo similar to Splinter Twin, more analogous to Copycat, really, but similar in scope to Splinter Twin, where you can play a creature on turn two that your opponent just doesn't actually care about. And then on turn three, you can slam down Intruder Alarm, tap that creature, make a token, and then untap it and make all the tokens. Literally all of them. And suddenly your opponent says, oh, I guess I'm dead. Or, oh, I've got Anger of the Gods. You know, I either have the answer or I'm dead. But Scotty took it a step further and was playing cards like Jace, Thoughtseize, Counter Magic, Liliana of the Veil. He was a very capable control deck if the combo didn't work and while he was trying to set up the combo, which I thought was really interesting. And it really kind of speaks to the nature of the modern format, where even though there's a lot of really dumb, stupid, broken things in this format, doing something that's maybe a little bit less broken or a little bit more fair, and it's weird to say that Infinite Creatures is more fair than something like Storm Hollow One or what have you, but that's the modern world we live in. doing something that's more fair, but being able to keep your opponent from killing you while you're trying to set it up or trying to leverage it properly, that's not a terrible place to be. Another possibility I've considered with the Intruder Alarm combo is to play something like Foundry Sword with it so that you have a slow grinding combo to go alongside it, similar to the old Thopter Depths deck from Extended that got Sword of the Meek banned in Modern forever. The fact that you can kind of eke out little advantages on the back of this combo and then, you know, eventually leverage the Intruder Alarm setup, that's fine. And the fact that you can attack with the tokens that you made the last turn, and if you have the alarm but they keep killing your other token producer, but you can just make another Thopter and untap all the ones you attacked with last turn, like, that's intriguing. So, I mean, there's maybe a little bit of design space to play with on Intruder Alarm combo in Modern. And while I'm not going to be working on it myself, at least not yet, it's definitely something I'm keeping my eye on, and I would recommend the same. Again, not going to pretend this deck is going to set the world on fire, but if you want kind of a starter for Modern at locals, whether it's your LGS, 1K, whatever, I think it's fine. You know, it's just off the beaten path enough. It dodges enough commonly played sideboard hate to maybe have some legs in this format. So with that, we're gonna wrap up the main body of the show. But again, the brews to look out for in Standard, it's Punisher Burn, and it's the idea of playing Gutter Snipe in maybe a budget-friendly Is It Drakes. You know, both of those seem like reasonable options for somebody who's looking to pick up Standard or who's looking for something just different in Standard instead of just mashing your 3-4 into their 3-4 or trying to keep the board clear and resolve Teferi or playing a bunch of really fast white creatures and praying to all the gods that your opponent doesn't have, you know, Ritual of Soot, Deafening Clarion, or Settle the Wreckage. So, you know, whatever the case may be, I think those two decks are reasonable places to start if you're looking for either a new deck in Standard, you know, to really start exploring the format, or if you are looking for just a different experience. And then for Modern, I mean, Hollow Phoenix is going to be broken. It's already a little bit broken. I don't want to think about how consistent that deck is going to get as it gets tuned by more and more hands. That deck is going to be terrifying. And it might finally be a deck that gets something banned that maybe doesn't deserve it, but I don't know. And then Intruder Alarm combo is just sweet. Like, that's all there is to say about it. I love that style of deck. It's a combo control deck. And as somebody who has played a lot of Upheaval Psychotog, as somebody who played a fair amount of Thopter Foundry Sword of the Meek, and as somebody who played Copycat in Standard, I love combo control. So, thanks for listening, everybody. If you would like to contact the show, you can do so by various social media means. The first is to hit me on Twitter, @HomewardPathMTG. It's exactly what it sounds like. Facebook, my name is Adam Spain, like the country. I generally respond to messages, and I have added several listeners to my friends list. I interact with them all the time. I love getting to talk to listeners. It's the most humbling experience I get to go through. Somebody sending me a message and saying, hey, keep up the good work. That ignites the fire. That gets me excited. So I thank you so much for the people who have reached out, for the people who do talk to me regularly. I really do appreciate it. And I'm at a loss for words again. I couldn't do this without the support of people who are just engaged and interested and want, you know what they want to see and not afraid to tell me what they want to see. And then if you would like to join the Facebook groups conversations, we have two. One of them is the Homeward Pathfinders. It is the Facebook group for the show, and then there's the Constructed Criticism family, which you can join for the network as a whole, and you can see all of the better content on the site. I say better because it is, but you know, interact with everybody involved in not only my show but the rest of them as well, and just, you know, really enjoy this community that Spencer Howland has done such a fantastic job building and maintaining. I am still so grateful to this day for that. And I am getting close to the driveway, so it's time to take the phone off airplane mode so that I can get to my favorite segment every week. So as a dad, as somebody who enjoys horrible, horrible puns, in determining what my Twitter outreach program was going to be, you know, getting people engaged in the show in a fun way, I wanted to find something appropriate. And it has kind of taken on a life of its own, for lack of a better way of putting it. We have brought back the hashtag MTG Dad Jokes, because I love them. I love a good pun, and I make them all the time. The number of times I've told my wife in a game of Pauper, here, let me ponder that idea for a second, you know, or I'm looking at the top card in my library with an opt that I've cast in Standard, and I say, I'm going to opt out of this card. It's fun. So MTG Dad Jokes, that's my favorite thing that I get to do every week. And let's see, what do we got here? First one is from Spencer Howland, or it's from Michael Hinderocker, by way of Spencer Howland, says, hits threshold with nimble mongoose in play. The goose is loose! I love it. Oh, man, I loved it. I loved it. And then Brian Canada at Cure for the Common Game, another good friend of mine, and I highly recommend checking out his content. He is even more of a filthy casual than I am. He is the commander guy. His goal is to have a commander deck built around every single legendary creature ever, and not like interchanging cards between them, like every single one of them with its own 100 card deck. And he sent me one, and it's the shapeshifter from Unhinged that is the blank name. It's just the blank. And somebody wrote your name on it. Love it. Evan Irwin had another one, and I completely forgot about this. Said, if you want to nabe my lover, you got to get with my friends. Love it. Love it. Oh, what is this one? Let's see. Oh, here we go. We have the, I'm finding old ones that I never did. I'm feeling horrible about this now. Jadine Klomperin says, just put the finishing touches on what can generously be called an experimental Jund list for tomorrow. Excited to play. And the first comment says, I hope the title is Frenzy with Benefits. And then moving over, I got to get over to Facebook now. I'm going to dig up a few more. We've had some gems this week. Let's see. Where are you? Wow, these are some old threads. I need to pull this up a little bit more effectively. Hang on. Hang on, everybody. We'll get there. So, yeah, this is a labor of love on my part. Sorry. Spencer in sharing the deck tech with him and Boots at Snapkeep Arcade said, how good is Arclight Phoenix? Is it great? Is it? Anyone? Okay. Anyway, I enjoyed that one too. So thanks again, everybody, for all the great submissions. I really enjoy it. Next week, I'm going to try to find something else fun to talk about. If you have any suggestions, you have anything you really want to hear about on the show, please send them to me. I'm open to all of them right now. And I will catch everybody next week. Thanks for listening and see you soon.